it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
93.7 The Fan will showcase a different community each Saturday through the Youth Football Showcase with a special visit from members of the fan staff. Do you want 93.7 The Fan to visit your game? Email youthsports@937thefan.com with your group name, your group's main contact info, and potential dates. Details at 937thefan.com, brought to you by Steel City Shredding, Saloni's Italian Bread, and Pelman Electric. Donnie Football in for the guys on this Football Friday. Well, just know Joe today. Joe back in Buffalo attending to a family matter. So best wishes go out to him. Austin Bechtold is here. He is behind the glass. You can follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan, which is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. That music on a Friday around 12:30 only means one thing. It is time for a Bechtold breakdown. Austin?
Come one, come all. It's the Bechtold Breakdown for this Friday, September 12th, 2025. And the Bechtold Breakdown is brought to you by our good friends at Southside Plumbing and Heating, our wonderful friend Jake, who's listening right now from Southside Plumbing and Heating. And we start, Donnie, with the news that was announced today by the Pittsburgh Penguins that Marc-Andre Fleury is back. He is signing a little deal with the Penguins that will allow him to play a preseason game on September 27th. It's we're being referred to as a tryout contract for Fleury. So basically, one of those one-day contracts that somebody signs to retire as a Penguin, retire as a Steeler, retire as a Pirate. This is Fleury's chance to play in an exhibition game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Donnie, I love it. Give Fleury a chance to go out there and play again. Why not?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Now, they are able to do this in a preseason game and kind of use that loophole of the tryout contract so they can kind of have their fun that way. It should get some extra people in the building for a preseason matchup. I would imagine that if possible, even if these guys don't play, that Crosby, Letang, and Gino will all dress, because you just have a great photo op waiting to happen after that game. I've already seen some people and some on the YouTube chat say that he's going to go out there and get a shutout in that game on the 27th. This is something that the Penguins will have to lean on a little bit more in the 25-26 season, because I think it will be a pretty ugly one unless they surprise all of us. I think they have a chance to be one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference, maybe one of the worst teams in the league. And hey, the objective should be to be as bad as possible, because Gavin McKenna, who will play at Penn State this season, he is the lottery ticket that is awaiting whoever gets that first overall pick. Could the Penguins get lucky for a third year or third time in about 45 years? Yeah, actually just over 40 years. You go back to 1984 there. Also, if their objective wasn't to be horrible, I would say let Fleury actually play in real games. And who knows, maybe he will be so happy with how that preseason game goes, he just comes out of retirement and they sign him. He would be the goalie that I trust the most for them. He would be their best goalie.
Yeah, I agree. He probably would be. And Donnie, I'm in full agreement with you. Like, the Penguins need to suck this year. Now, that is sad because, you know, what's going on with Sidney Crosby? Does he actually want potentially to be out and play on a winner again? The best way for the Penguins to move forward and win again in short order is to be so bad this year that you have Gavin McKenna next year. I'm not openly saying, like, I want them to lose every single game. I'm not. I want them to be able to use this season as a farewell to Evgeny Malkin, develop young players, They should have traded Rickard Rakell and Erik Karlsson by now. And in doing that, opens the door for younger players. You keep Rust with Crosby, who's his guy. Like, I'm sorry. That's how you're going to be able to get better in short order, is to be able to get a generational talent like that. There's no other way.
And they're going to lean a whole lot on the nostalgia this season because it is believed to be Evgeny Malkin's final season in Pittsburgh. So those final handful of home games, we will see an uptick in attendance. But otherwise, I think outside of some big promotions that they do, it will sadly be kind of a ghost town in that arena. Now, that's why I wondered when I first saw this thing about Fleury, just a teaser that got thrown out there, I thought it was a jersey retirement of some sort that we would get throughout the course of this season. So maybe that waits a couple of years down the road because it does make sense to wait a few years after somebody has retired to get the number retired. By the way, you can listen to this show, Pomp and Joe, on demand, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. What's next, Austin?
Yeah, and that eventually I think will happen where Fleury does end up getting his jersey retired.
No question.
Just wait a little bit. So I saw this on Twitter today. Which all 21st century team are you taking? Backyard Brawl edition. So here's the team. Pitt has Kenny Pickett, LeSean McCoy, James Conner, Larry Fitzgerald, Antonio Bryant, Jordan Addison, and the tight end is Chris Wilson against the likes of Pat White and Steve Slayton and Tavon Austin and Coburn and Stedman Bailey, Kevin White. Like, West Virginia's got some decent wide receivers in there, too. Trevon Wesco as the tight end. I think Pitt runs away with this, Donnie. I mean, other than Pat White, I think the overall longevity of his career in college was better than Kenny Pickett. Like, Pickett, I think, Pat White, I think, probably did have the better season overall if you compare him individually with Pickett and Pat White. But Shady McCoy, I take him over Slayton. I would take Connor. I would take Slayton over Connor. But Larry Fitzgerald over Tavon Austin, you got to take Larry Fitz. Antonio Bryant against Stedman Bailey, you got to take Antonio Bryant. Jordan Addison against Kevin White, I think, can go back and forth. I'd maybe take Kevin White there, but Addison won the Biletnikoff Award.
Yeah, I mean, Pitt has the clear advantage to me at receiver. Very, very clear. I mean, and I know that there's some decent names there that, you know, don't get caught up on what the guys did in the NFL, just what they did in college. I get that. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald should have won the Heisman Trophy way back when. Jordan Addison was the Biletnikoff winner, as you said. Antonio Bryant was a fantastic college football player and a pretty good pro as well. Fitzgerald just happened to be one of the best at his position all time. Running back, Slayton was electric. Yeah. He was a fantastic college player. But I think Pitt, with the two guys they have, with Shady McCoy and James Conner and their careers, they have the advantage there. Pat White, I would give him the edge over Kenny Pickett, but you have that one season of Pickett where he was a Heisman finalist.
Yeah, and it was a dominant season from Pickett that year.
Which is very big. But Pat White, I think longevity and consistency in the career, we will say, goes to him. I was surprised to find no bigger names at tight end, but as I'm trying to rack some, I mean, Doran Dickerson comes to mind. Pitt has also had some guys in the last 10 years or so at the position. I can't really think of any West Virginia tight ends, though, beyond the names you already listed. Did they just do offense or did they do full teams?
Yeah, this was just offense and skill position players. Doran should be on this list instead of Chris Wilson, don't you think?
I would have went with Doran.
Yeah, I would have picked Doran as well.
I think Pitt has the advantage there. I'm surprised they didn't go fullback. Owen Schmidt for West Virginia, they would have had the advantage. You could have went with George Aston for Pitt, maybe. Or Big Lusaka Polite, I don't know. I think Pitt has the advantage.
I do, too. And I think it's closer than people might anticipate it to be, but Pitt definitely wins.
When you first brought the topic up, when you first teased it last segment, I thought, okay, there's no way West Virginia stacks up. I guess I always just first think of all time.
Yeah.
And in that case, it's not even close. No. I mean, Pitt wipes the floor with them with Marino, probably their second team.
Yeah, Ditka and just all those guys. Hugh Green.
You could, if you did all time, you could probably do a second, like a all-time Pitt second team, and it would be better than West Virginia's first team.
You can do that with Penn State and compare too, and I think that you'd have a very, very even team. Pitt honestly might win. I think Pitt probably does have the better all-time team than Penn State.
All time? I mean, yeah. I mean, quarterback, it's not close.
Quarterback, it's Marino. No debate there. Running back, you're looking at Saquon Barkley against Dorsett. Man, wow, is that a matchup?
Wide receiver, I think Pitt has them.
Yeah, I mean, Godwin.
Penn State would find
Allen Robinson.
A couple of offensive linemen, and then on defense, they would take some positions, I think. But Pitt is really, like, when you do these all-time teams, even though they have not had the success of a program like Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia, you know, name the blue blood college football program. I mean, even Penn State, Pitt is not on their level in college football. But you talk all-time teams, Pitt is right up there with the best of them.
Yes, no doubt about it. With all-time great players in college football that translated to the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, Pitt is what? 10 Pro Football Hall of Famers? And that number is just going to continue to go up with Larry Fitz and Aaron Donald. And they're going to be right up there with the USC, Notre Dame's of the world. At the very top of college football.
Yeah, I mean, they're already top five of all time.
All right, Donnie, so I saw this. The Pro Football Hall of Fame released the list of 162 senior player nominees for the Hall of Fame class of 2026. So this number will go down to 50 before it's reduced to 3 senior finalists. One of those guys, LC Greenwood, that's on the list for the Steelers. And I personally think that Greenwood is a Hall of Famer. If this was... I think that sacks not being an official stat in quotes since 82 is dumb.
Yeah.
Like, they've gone back. Look what they've done in baseball. They've gone back and have put in stats from, you know, the 1910s that weren't considered at first. They've put in, you know, Negro League stats. They've put in a lot of those numbers, which I think is really cool and historic. Why not count sacks dating back to, like, even if it's just the Super Bowl era?
That's something, too, that somebody like Pro Football Focus, that's a project they should do. Instead of saying that a quarterback that had a 136 rating and 4 touchdowns and no picks had a bad week, use your time and go back to the older days of the NFL before certain stats were implemented and work those in. I mean, it's not as if those guys aren't watching NFL film 24/7. But Greenwood is somebody that belongs in there. And, you know, he passed away a dozen years ago now, almost on the nose, September 29 of 2013. He passed away at just 67. 6 Pro Bowls, multi-time All-Pro player, a member of the All-70s team, as were a lot of that Steelers defense. One of the, it's hard to say, unsung guys of that 70s defense, because he still had plenty of accolades in his own right, but there were just so many star players on that defense that you think of before of Greenwood. I mean, yeah. You have Joe Green, you have Jack Lambert, you have Jack Ham, you have Mel Blunt, just so many guys that maybe Greenwood gets a little bit lost in the shuffle, but he feels like the guy for a long time that should have been in the Hall of Fame. And he has the 4 Super Bowls. Also, a 10th round pick way back in 1969 was LC Greenwood from Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Arkansas,
baby.
Pine Bluff.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
78 sacks for Greenwood. Pro Football Reference went back and Contabulated everything, including 11-71. He had 11-74. He was finished sixth in defensive player of the year voting that year. If you're looking for an unsung guy, somebody who was overlooked, I think it's definitely LC Greenwood, and he should be somebody that has an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. It should be a finalist at the very end of it, and I think probably should get in. All right, Malik Harrison and Skylar Thompson earlier this week replaced on injured reserve. So the Steelers currently have two active quarterbacks, Donnie. Does this mean good things for Will Howard to be activated? Like, I didn't know Skylar Thompson was even injured.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. I didn't know Skylar Thompson had an actual injury either. I mean, he got through the preseason unscathed, and then he didn't play last week. It was week one. Unless something popped up in practice, which is pretty rare in the NFL nowadays because they try to keep the injury scenarios away from practice. I mean, yeah, you get your non-contact injuries every now and then, but it's not often that you find a guy that is healthy after a game hurt by the time you reach the next one. So I don't know if this is a paper move of sorts, if they want to start the clock on Will Howard. I would think, though, that you're not going to play the entire season with just two active QBs. So it tells me that a door has been opened here for us eventually to get a Will Howard, not appearance in a game per se, but Will Howard on the roster as the emergency third quarterback. And who knows with how things end up. I mean, we have seen years where the Steelers have used three and sometimes four different QBs, so maybe that could happen. I mean, I don't think Duck Hodges ever expected to play back in 2019.
No, that would derail the season if that ultimately is the case. And, you know, if you have to get to your third quarterback, because that means Aaron Rodgers is hurt, and that means that Mason Rudolph has not played well, and you are probably out of a playoff spot, and you're playing Will Howard just to see ultimately what you have in him. I think they might activate it. Like, I'm curious. I'm intrigued about what Will Howard could be. Like, I don't think he's the answer. I've been pretty vocal about that. But I think he could be a very solid backup in the NFL, maybe win you a couple of games and spot starts. So if this is the beginning of his opportunity to get more practice reps and stuff like that, where some people were saying, would Will Howard even be activated? Like, is this just a lost year? Is this his Roman Wilson year? It could be trending in the right direction for him in terms of returning from injury.
Yeah, and you brought up what your expectation for him is as a quarterback in the league. And I think it's perfectly fine that a guy that got picked where he did, if he is just a backup for, let's say, a decade or a dozen years, and he starts games here and there, that's perfectly fine. You can't have this. This goes back to, you know, training camp. You can't really have these sky-high expectations for somebody that got taken like 185th overall
right
in the draft. So, I mean, if he is never anything more than a trusty backup, if he is this era's version of, let's say, a Charlie Batch, that's perfectly okay to me. And with the Malik Harrison thing, that means more Cole Holcomb and possibly even Carson Bruner, Mark Bruner's son, who is a good special teams guy who made the roster over Mark Robinson, and Holcomb coming off that pretty gruesome injury a couple of seasons ago. So we will see a little bit more of him. Patrick Queen and Peyton Wilson, they played a ton in that first game, but it wasn't pretty. They did not have many good-looking reps from that game against the Jets. So getting a little bit light at that position all of the sudden with Wilson and Queen leading the way.
Josh Edwards of CBS Sports has released his latest mock draft. He has Garrett Nussmeier, the number one pick in the draft, going to the New Orleans Saints, Donnie. I like Nussmeier. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks that are available in the draft. Lenoris Sellers, number two, to the Cleve Brownies. They go with Sellers, the very athletic South Carolina quarterback. Next quarterback that is taken off the board, Fernando Mendoza of Indiana. Wow, to the Rams at pick 11. I was surprised by that. And it all opens the door. I hope everyone's sitting down. Everyone's ready to send their insults on the text line and on the YouTube comments. I know it's coming. With the 14th pick in the 2026 NFL draft, the Pittsburgh Steelers select Drew Aller, quarterback, Penn State.
I knew that was coming.
You knew it was coming, Donnie. They have him as the fourth best quarterback available on the board. CBS Sports does. How would you feel if this actually did happen?
My hold up with Aller, it's been the same for a little bit. We had this conversation before we got into the college football season. I would feel better about that all happening if we saw him in some of these big games this season, and Penn State is going to play in them. Not every week are they going to play Villanova or Florida International or Nevada. They're going to play Oregon here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
They're going to play Ohio State down the road, and I would say it's a very high likelihood that Penn State is in the college football playoff. He needs to play well in those games. Even if they would lose, you know, if they go into Columbus and they lose a game, but he throws for 250 and two touchdowns or three touchdowns, I don't come away from that game thinking Drew Aller is one of the reasons why they lost, like you may have done in the last couple of Penn State-Ohio State meetings. So it doesn't even have to be a win in every case. I want to see him play well against the big dogs of college football. You know, you can beat up on the little guys all day long, and he does that. I need to see some big games in the big moments.
You know, Donnie, Colin Cowherd calls himself America's honesty broker. I will try to be the voice of reason with Drew Aller the best that I can, even though I will admit some biases. He played not very good in that first
half true.
Of the last matchup against FIU, whoever the hell they played. He did not play well in the first half. Like, he missed some throws. There were some layups that he missed.
What was it, 10-0 at halftime?
It was 10-0 at halftime. They ended up putting up a bunch of points. It ended up being late in the game. They still didn't cover. And Aller did not play that well in the game. I expect him against Villanova to go out there and tear it up, probably throw four touchdowns and, you know, put up 40-plus points on the board, and the defense maybe pitch another shutout. But I'm completely with you. What does he look like against Oregon? What does he look like against Ohio State? He wasn't necessarily bad in the Oregon game last year. Like, he made some good plays. Remember that fourth down play he made throwing into the end zone that I was sitting in at the Big Ten Championship, where he had a defender, like, draped all over him and made a pass to Harrison Wallace. That was a big-time play. Like, Aller has the traits, 6'5", 235. There's no doubt about it. It's the consistency that drives you nuts a little bit. There's no doubt that he has all the tools in him to do it. If he can go to Ohio State and win that game, I think it'll change the minds of a ton of people, because even I think they're going to lose that game in Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, I will try to hold off on just hating the guy because he goes to Penn State, but still, for me, the big holdup, he needs to have some big performances against Oregon, Ohio State. Eventually, once they get to the college football playoff, he needs those to bolster that resume. Anything else, Limits?
Yeah, I just want to say, Texter says, how about the fact that no Penn State quarterback has ever been great in the NFL? That is true. Kerry Collins had an okay career. We had the same thing about Ohio State until some guys named, C.J. Stroud emerged into the league. Somebody named Joe Burrow transferred but did go to Ohio State first. So we're starting to see that narrative change. Why can't it change with Penn State and Aller, too? Why can't we treat it for individually who the quarterbacks are rather than the programs developing them?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.